From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Larkspur in Marin County.
Simpson Beach.
I live in Noe Valley in Novato.
I live in San Anselmo right next to Fairfax.
Coming up, we learn how to unbuild the old Bay Bridge.
We're going to take the bridge apart in the reverse order to which it was constructed back in 1936.
Then we visit the city that wasn't built by the Bay.
Those hills that we all know and love. Each of those valleys would have been filled with single-family residential homes, about 26 or 27 apartment towers.
We go looking for the San Francisco that never was. Then we take a look at the one that used to be.
What is a map?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Pretty existential.
Charting our progress today on Cross Currents. The deadly typhoon Haiyan that hit the Philippines 6 days ago has claimed at least 2,000 lives, with hundreds of thousands of survivors left with no shelter. Thousands of miles away, here in the Bay Area, more than 400,000 Filipinos are watching what's happening and mobilizing to respond. Many are concentrated in places like Daly City and Union City. That's where I live, so yesterday I headed out to see how the community's faring.
My name is Marlene Balingit. We go to church every day and we pray for them, all the victims. My husband cries when he sees the images on TV. All of us 9 siblings are here, and I only have 3 nieces in the Philippines, but they are safe.
My name is Ramona Dizon. Every time I watch the TV, I always cried because I pity them. I want to help them in any way. They feel what they feel, that's all.
My name is Linda Canuto. My niece and my children, they are starting to get donations from other communities so they can send clothing or money, whatever other people can give.
And may the peace of the Lord be with you all.
My name is Father Geoffrey Baran. There's a lot of concern, frustrations, and maybe some are angry at the government that until now they have not done really anything to remove those debris, and then the bodies on the streets, they're still there. And then it is so sad that, but the good news is that in the midst of all these things, this destruction, people are, you know, putting their spirit together, their resources, to do something for them. I mean, they're hearing the cry of the poor. It was so overwhelming and so sad that the poor continue to be the victims of all these things. I'm angry because I care for these people.
574-5B.
From St. Anne's, I headed down the street to Seafood City, the Filipino supermarket, where I met the manager.
588.
My name is Alex Cuspina.
So, you know, you have a couple of remittance companies, people that send money back home since the typhoon. Has there been more? What have they been doing?
It's been more, you know, it's been more because a lot of people, you know, they're anxious about their families in the Philippines, so they're sending more money. And I think some of the remittances are waiving the fee. This store, Seafood City, is also accepting donations, cash donation for all of the victims of the typhoon there.
My name is Raul Misionario. I'm working for Atlas Shipper International. As the management's order, so all the Filipino is willing to send the boxes for donation, so we accept to send to the Philippines spray. It's no charge.
And how does that make you feel? What do you feel?
Yeah, it's fine. It's good because as a Filipino, it's the Philippines, everybody, you know, helping for us.
The The community is shocked, praying hard, and donating. Tomorrow there'll be a benefit concert at St. Anne's Church. Details are at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. And go to our Facebook page to share other ways to help out. We're KALW. Listening to Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. Here in the Bay Area, the potential for another kind of natural disaster, an earthquake, deeply affects the design of our urban landscape. One of the most visible examples is the new eastern span of the Bay Bridge, built to withstand what the old one could not. The new span has been open for nearly 3 months now, but if you've driven across it, you may have noticed that the mega project isn't quite over yet.
So I'm driving across the new eastern span of the Bay Bridge, and it's just really gorgeous. The sun is hitting it. It's just so beautiful. And then I look over, and I see the old bridge, which is just, like, so decrepit looking. I can't believe that we were driving over it for so long. I mean, it just, especially with this stark comparison between this gleaming white, almost sparkling bridge compared to this dull metal, boxy, outdated-looking thing. It's just really, really startling.
That's KALW's Isabel Angel describing the sight of the old span as she drives across the new one. Eventually, that old span will come down, and the man overseeing it is Bill Howe. He's a senior engineer with Caltrans, and he spoke with Isabel out on the old bridge about the massive task before him.
The first question people usually ask Bill Howe about the old Bay Bridge is, are you going to blow it up?
So yeah, explosive means would be discouraged, although expedient.
As we stand on the old bridge, Howe says that wouldn't be such a good idea.
It would probably cause a lot of environmental issues that we wouldn't want to deal with. So essentially what we're going to do is we're going to take the bridge apart in the reverse order to which it was constructed back in 1936.
The project will take about 3 years. If you drive across the Bay Bridge, you'll get a front row seat to the action. And it's actually already started, although you might not have noticed. Caltrans isn't doing the actual demolition. That job falls to the contractor who won the bid a year ago. Crews are already ripping up the asphalt and concrete and sending the debris to a recycler, where it could eventually end up back on the roads. And this week, after a short delay, workers began tearing down the boxy cantilever section.
Which are the two peaks that you see when you come out of the tunnel in the old days, and the suspended span in between the two peaks.
In less than 2 months, most of the cantilever will be gone. All of this material belongs to the contractor, including the steel, which they get to sell. So far, the contractor has kept mum about where it might end up.
Steel being a worldwide commodity, it might go anywhere. It could stay here in the States. It might go to China. That's the contractor's prerogative.
Once that's done, another contractor will take apart the foundation of the bridge, all the way down to the mud line. All in all, the project is estimated to cost $239 million, and Caltrans says it should be done before 2017. The next big milestone for the new span will be finishing the wildly popular bike path. Right now, as anyone who's gone out there will see, the path stops short of Yerba Buena Island, forcing walkers and bikers to turn back around. Again, Bill Howe.
Because for those that don't know, there's right about the E2 point, the old bridge and the new bridge almost touch. And they're so close that the bike path had to stop.
So crews will have to carefully dismantle that part of the bridge before the bike path can go through to Yerba Buena. That should happen by the summer of 2015. But some people aren't as eager to see the 75-year-old span come down. The old bridge has been around long enough that there have been efforts to keep it and turn it into a park. I asked Howe what he thought about the idea.
This bridge the reason it's vacated is because it wasn't seismically safe. And that same hazard still exists.
But here we are on the old span. And Hal comes out here several times a week for the project. So I had to ask.
Are you at all worried that while you're out here at some point, before the bridge gets demolished, there will be the earthquake that takes it down?
Yeah, all the time.
Like right now?
Yeah, right now. I think it's dumb for us to be standing here right now.
I guess I should schedule interviews on the new bridge from now on. For Cross Currents, I'm Isabel Angel. So what do you think of the new Bay Bridge? Let us know on our tip line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. One of the bonuses of living and working in San Francisco is experiencing things that other people only get to see in the movies. The Golden Gate Bridge, Coit Tower, the futuristic BART trains.
Nine car train for Dublin Pleasanton in 1 minute.
Well, that last one may not be a tourist draw, but it was a futuristic innovation when it was first envisioned back in 1957. And the BART system is an example of a grand plan that changed Bay Area life forever. But there have been dozens of ambitious projects to reinvent our urban landscape that never got off the drawing board. These, quote, things that never were, are the focus of a handful of current exhibitions throughout our area under the title Unbuilt San Francisco, The View from Future's Past. One of the exhibits is at the California Historical Society in San Francisco, where we sent KALW's Stephen Short to learn what might have been.
This is a story of what might have been.
And it's a story that started over 100 years ago. Nearly everyone knows about the great earthquake and fire of 1906 that devastated San Francisco. It so thoroughly destroyed the city that in many areas, fireplace chimneys were the only things left standing. But this was hardly the first time the city had been destroyed and rebuilt.
San Francisco has always been remaking itself. It was never quite good enough.
Anthea Hardig, executive director of the California Historical Society, says understanding how the appearance of both the city and the Bay Area came to be gives us,
I think, a really wonderful lens through which to see what we've inherited and how complicated it really is, especially San Francisco, literally almost layered upon itself. If you think of the ships, you know, that are underneath, you know, most of the waterfront property.
While you probably know about the historic earthquake, you might not know that much of the city's financial district is literally built on top of abandoned ships from the gold rush days. San Francisco is currently adding another layer with more new construction than there has been in years. And Hardig notes, we're once again
in the middle of a conversation about who is this city for, who gets to live here, who can afford to live here, and how do they actually use and comprehend the built environment.
This desire for understanding explains the subtitle of Unbuilt San Francisco, The View from Future's Past.
Looking back helps us understand we chose to do this. And maybe it was we chose to do it for perfectly good, solid, you know, reasons that helped us enact the social covenant. And so the hindsight afforded by history and by exhibitions like this one, I think is very powerful and very instructive.
The most striking and perhaps shocking item in the Society's exhibit is a 10 by 10 foot topographical architectural model of Marin Chelo. This ambitious planned community was approved by the Marin County supervisors in the mid-1960s and would have been built right smack in the heart of the Marin Headlands.
It has a beautiful scale model of the Golden Gate Bridge. You come up over the bridge and literally the next crest of those hills that we all know and love. Each of those valleys would have been filled with single-family residential homes, about 20, 26th or 27th, apartment towers, clusters, all kind of clustered around this new water feature that would have come up from the creek and literally kind of define the spine.
And this will create a series of 17 or more waterfalls, and then on the around the lagoon will be activity areas.
This film clip in the exhibit from Kron TV in 1967 describes the plan.
The commercial facilities and offices will front on this large mall park.
Anyone today who even joked about building in the Marin Headlands would face impossible odds, and the idea of a whole new town would definitely be a non-starter. Yet it had been approved and was starting construction at the time of that broadcast. Again, Anthea Hardick.
What I think is fascinating about Maranchello is the way in which we kind of perceive the Marin Headlands now as natural. And while there are many natural features remaining, the Marin Headlands, the Presidio, Mare Island, Hunter's Point, were a ring of fortresses around the Bay Area, held by the United States government, first the Department of War, the Army, the Department of War, and then the Department of Defense, really from 1850 or so onward.
So it seemed logical that these restricted military holdings could become housing for the ever-growing population of the Bay Area.
But for many, this was no way to treat the headlands. So a very nascent, very young environmental community worked tirelessly to fight this.
The idea of environmental activism was still very new at the time. Bob Pratzel, heard here in the documentary Rebels with a Cause, is the attorney who used a lawsuit to press the rewind button on the Maranchello development.
Nobody thought would prevail in it. At the time, we're called conservationists, which is kind of a dirty word. You were the next step below a communist.
An organization was formed through these loose-knit efforts. It took the name Nature Conservancy. And unbelievably, they stopped the project, as recounted by KPIX-TV reporter Bill Hillman in this report, which is part of the exhibit.
Not the least remarkable part of this story is the fact that for perhaps the very first time, a major subdivision has been not only stopped, but even turned around. In that sense, this is a story of what might have been.
And another chapter in that story is currently underway. The controversies over the proposed Warriors Stadium and the election defeat of the 8 Washington Housing Project near San Francisco's waterfront are just two examples of how we are currently shaping our unbuilt future. At the California Historical Society in San Francisco, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
The exhibit Unbuilt, The View of Futures Past, continues at the California Historical Society through December 29th. You can find more information at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. All week long on KALW, you've been hearing this.
I mean, this is a great day in the store. I've got a 53. I've got two 53s, a 56, a 59, 59 Bay, 53 Bay, World's Fairs, Texas, 19th century politics. Texas is unmarked, but I know it's a Texas drawer. If you open it, it's got some really good Texas in it. I love it. So anyway.
We asked you to tell us who that was and where we recorded it. KALW's Casey Miner shows us where to go for the answer.
Hello.
Hello.
So my name is Jim Shine. I'm partnering with my wife, Marty Shine, and we have Shine & Shine Antique Maps on Upper Grant Avenue in San Francisco. That peninsula piece is probably 4x5. That's a little one. That's a nice little piece. It's very concise.
I want to ask you a question that may sound silly, but you sort of piqued my interest when you pointed at that one on the wall that I'm going to ask you to talk about. But what is a map?
Huh. Well, yeah, that's a good question. That's pretty existential. I mean, you could go into a deep one on that one. You know, a map can be as simple as a line drawing. A map is a conversation, truly. A map is shorthand for a book. A map is a way of letting us know A to B without having to go there. A map is likely the first reason that we had conversations. But I imagine the cave drawings in France are maps, right? We want to know where we've been or where we're going, but we also just like to know where we are. And that's the most fun and common thing. And if we can find where we are at some other time, when somebody else had a different perspective on where we are, that's what I think people are often relating to in a nostalgic sense.
Could I ask you about this one that's up here?
Yeah, sure. This is actually... it's a map of Sausalito, and... Sausalito was a dominion of Captain John Richardson, I believe his name was, and Richardson Bay was named after him. And Richardson settled there in probably about 1849, I think, and had a land grant claim to the bay and the area there, and probably lived a fairly agrarian lifestyle over there. Being possibly the only guy living on that peninsula, as many people were in Marin. You had a lot of land to yourself, and these are all the old ranchos. And this map was kind of interesting to me because it had some kind of anomalies in its presentation. It had this line drawing of the boundaries and then this dyslexic spelling, essentially, of town and the Sausalito and the Spanish and a font. And then on the left and right-hand margins, in rather elaborate and accurate hand, in fountain pen or quill of the time, a very well-educated hand, there are all these notations. And then it was pretty dirty. I cleaned it a bit. When it came to me, it was rolled up and tattered and dirty. And I said, I'll clean it up a bit, and I had... a professional cleaner. Once I cleaned it, I said, oh, you know, somebody could do a little bit better job than I on this. And you see, it's still pretty dirty. So it's really filthy. But
how do you even clean a map? I don't even know how you do that.
Giant erasers, essentially broken up rubber gum erasers, one of the document cleaning pad processes. They're very delicately and very carefully and with as little physical contact as possible. We did not moisten this map in any way. One of the ways you can clean a map or something would be to bathe it, truly, which would be a process of washing it. And there's a great risk involved in that, but it is not uncommon. On many of the older maps made on linen papers that are 400 or 500 years old, they actually would withstand bathing very well because there's such high quality paper. You might have the image float off of it, but paper will survive. This is a very expensive edition. It's a master sheet. It's a steel engraved master sheet. It's made through an intaglio engraving process on a steel plate that documents every square inch of the city in a 20-foot contour. It's a riparian map with, every black dot is a building. And here's the mission. Here's the bull ring across the street. So you've got an incredible scale. It's really a human scale. It's done probably with six-man survey teams and 6-foot-long chains and all of the equipment appropriate for that scale.
Wait, what across the street?
The bull ring. So the circle right here, it's kind of weird little thing. Maps are shorthand. I have a good brain. It's a little bit of a weird brain, and it remembers things, so I can tell you about all the maps and where they are and all that. I've had this map many times over 30 years, and I still find new things.
It's amazing.
A lot of maps.
So are there any Bay Area sounds you think we should know about? Call us and tell us where we should record next. We love hearing from you. The number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And go to klw.org to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Now, that's it for today's edition of Cross Currents. The team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Maya DePaola Hanica, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Christina Loring, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Chris Hoff, Ryan Miller, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our senior producer. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we're listener-supported radio. This is Honey Archer. The San Francisco band is headlining on Saturday at 50 Mason Social House. Music starts at 9:30 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.